tonight when Matt sort of said Fee was going to talk about the prodigal son, what was your first reaction? Okay, it's good, it's good, it's good, it's a good passage. Yeah, sorry, you know the story, don't you? Can I have a hand up if you have the story of the prodigal son in mind? Have you heard the story? All right, okay, let's go home. No. Okay. And this is actually the main reason why I came to that passage for tonight, and I'll just say a couple of things about that. We have just been finishing one series on the red letters, and as a parable of Jesus, this is certainly in the red letters that we have in a lot of English Bibles. It's something which is quite English. In French or Spanish or Italian, you don't have any editions with red letters. So it is something quite specific to one culture, these red letters, but it is quite crucial, the words of Jesus. That prodigal son is in the sort of church that we would know, the sort of church that we would visit, is one of the passages that is most read and commented. People just talk about that one because it is a very good story. It says a lot of things that need to be heard. We know what's good in the story. We know what the red letters that we have say. We know that. Is it ever good to believe that you have got it all sussed and that you know full well what Jesus says in his parable? No, it's not. So let's start with that little bit of caution. Okay. How can you sort of come to that text afresh? Now, the reason why I came to that for tonight is a few weeks ago, I was reading that story, and it actually started a little bit of a process for me. Because yes, that's a story I know. Yes, I've heard it so many times, so many sermons about it. And yet, 3 weeks ago, I found something that I had never seen in that story. I personally don't find it too difficult to take time out to listen to God and to link that to the topic that we've started, the Sabbath. Yes, finding the time to hear God's voice. Okay, I'm not going to be very... it's not a question of personal pride, okay? Let's clarify that. But I do hear God speak to me regularly, on a regular basis. Okay. And Jonathan made a point quite similar two or three weeks ago when you were last speaking. I wasn't there, but I listened to you. Okay. My key question for tonight, for us, is how are we able to sort of dig further and hear afresh and act upon what we hear? How do we hear as well as what we hear? How does what we've heard before can in fact narrow down what we will be hearing in the future? And I think that's an important question for all of us. What we've heard before sometimes just narrows down what we hear in the future. And if we are serious about hearing God's voice, that's something that we need to be aware of. The final word wasn't spoken in the past. The final word of Jesus are in our future. We often read and understand that story of the prodigal son as a story of conversion. Somebody needed to be reconciled with the father. Somebody has come back home. Yes, it does say that clearly. that son that comes back, then we add something about the resentment of the other son who has always done what is right, but should be happy for his brother and is not quite happy for his brother who has returned. Here's a question. Is that prodigal son story a success story? The success being that the son has eventually come back to the father. Is it that success story? Possibly, possibly. But it's useful for us, I believe, to keep our mind open to what else can be heard in the parable. If we come to scriptures assuming that we've understood it, we know what it's about, maybe we're losing something that God has to tell us. So most of what I will say tonight needs to come with that sort of a disclaimer, but you could also understand it differently. I am not saying that what you've heard in the past was wrong. I am really not. It's not a question of right and wrong. It really is a question of what else can it say? Because I really believe passionately that the Word of God has so much wealth for us that it goes on and on and on. And it's not a question of contradiction with something else that you have heard. It's just a question of addition, expansion, and going further and to areas that we were not considering before. So, if you're ready for that, here's the question. How about the father in the story is not God? Let's face it. The parable of the lost son brushes up the portrait of a fairly dysfunctional family. That group of men does not work. The elder son doesn't have a wife, does he? He's a mature man, he hasn't got a wife. We don't hear about a mother. That father is a father. Where's the mother? There's no children in that group of people. That is odd. Okay, it is a parable. So a parable is a sketch. A parable is a stylized story. It paints an impressionist picture. It is not meant to be realistic. However, those three men have a fairly dysfunctional look like a very dysfunctional group of people. Okay, guess what? I think I know the mother. The mother that is not mentioned in the story, I think I know her name. And her name is Joy. How about Joy is actually the main point of the story? It's a story that we traditionally call the prodigal son. But is it about Joy coming home? The prodigal Joy, the one who is absent in the story. The feminine touch is missing. Now, in the languages I know, most of the words, most of the nouns for joy happen to be feminine by a sort of 90%. In French, in Spanish, in Arabic, in Hebrew, the words that you use for joy are all feminine. That's ancient wisdom. It is good wisdom. Joy is feminine. That doesn't mean female. We had this conversation earlier. Okay, feminine is not female. Masculine is not male. Okay, I like grammar, but we're not going to go there tonight. The masculine alone is miserable. Why does the younger son want to leave that setup? He wants to leave. Why? Is it because it is joyless?
one of the respectful words in French for a prostitute is une fille de joie, a girl of joy. I'm not promoting anything, I'm just stating a fact, okay? Now, consciously or subconsciously, is that younger son, is his motivation a quest for joy, the joy that he did not have at home? What about the resentment and anger felt by the elder brother? Maybe the reason for his outburst is not really rivalry. It's not jealousy, jealousy towards his newly returned brother. It may not even be about the dad. The anger might be caused by the sudden realization that there has been no joy, no fun, no exultation in his life. That's a cause for anger. Midlife, you realize that you've missed out on something quite key. The older son sees that. You've never gave me the fat, any sort of fat cast for me to rejoice with my friends. It wasn't there. It hasn't been there. That I am angry about. He realizes that when he sees the party meal, the music, the dances, real joy, fun. When he sees joy in his father's face, that's when the absence of joy really hurts him the most. Seeing that joy in his father's face, knowing that his presence was not causing his father the joy he's now seeing. Isn't what we see in the parable a failing dad? One son ran away from him. Was that dad the cause of the departure of his younger son? If it was, if it is a joyless setting, a miserable family life, a disappointing, limited world, is the younger son fully responsible for wanting to fly the nest? No, no. He wants to change his life. He wants to find something new. That is a good motivation to leave. Now, the younger son is all impatient. He asked for his inheritance. I am impatient. I want it now. Do you know what? I relate to that sort of character because I was quite keen to leave home. I was quite keen to go and see the world. There's quite a few things that that younger brother in the story did and I didn't do. I'll let you guess. Was that dad the cause of the departure of his younger son? Don't believe for 1 minute that it is only an intellectual questioning that I'm posing. What caused me to sort of reflect to this parable that we all know was the realization that joy was actually possibly another way to read it. It's not that everything we've heard before is wrong. Not at all. Not at all. But maybe at that time, a few weeks ago, I realized that, okay, joy is quite key for me. There's quite a few things that are noticeable in that parable. One of them is that you've got two words used for life in that parable. In the Greek version, in the original version in Greek. One of these two words is bios. We've got that in biology, biopsy, anything to do with life, bios. That's one of the Greek words for that. Now, bios is the word that is translated by the estate. everything that he has, his living. There's another word that is used for life, and that's Zoe. We've got that in zoology. Okay? And that's the life that the younger brother comes back to. So life is also quite key in the story. And when Luke is using these two words within two lines of each other, that is good literature. That is good writing. It's a good literary device. Okay. The life the younger son is wasting away, that life is that Zoe. That's the life he's wasting away. It's the life that animates us. It's the life that keeps us surviving. It's the life, the Zoe, that we should have in abundance. It's the life that runs out. It's our mortality. It runs out. That's the life that has a timer built into it. And that's the life that that younger son was wasting away. A life full of aspirations and mired by disillusionment. The elder brother. He didn't feel the same desire to go away. He stays home. Nothing is actually said of his aspirations. He was dutiful, we know that. He was faithful to his father. But it was a task-oriented life. It was predictable. It is uneventful. I hear a little bit of the Martha and Mary story as well there, taking the time off. It's not just about the task. The joy needs to be there in the real life, and joy is not predictable. Now, sorry, that got very loud suddenly, didn't it? That woke you up, didn't it? Now, I've done something which is not acceptable, and I apologize. I haven't started by reading the scripture. Because what I would like us to do is read it afresh. So I'm going to conclude with reading the scriptures that we've talked about. With a real Galilean accent. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate, bios, life.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had. Set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wide living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare, and here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servant, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. Your brother has come, he replied, and your father has killed a fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you killed the fattened calf and the fattened calf for him. My son, the father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. Andy is going to come, I'm sure, and lead us to finish in worship. As a way of conclusion, I've got just a few questions. What had been lost was not just one son. Joy itself was lost. And the end of the parable is the moment the father at least finds his joy again. Who are you tonight? Who are we tonight? Are we more like that father? Or are we more like one of these two siblings? Are you the younger son at heart who needs joy, who needs a genuine human, that is a genuine human need? He needs to find joy and contentment. I can see that for myself. That aspiration, that quest, in neither good or bad. But yes, beware of how you are finding and looking for that joy. Or are you the elder son at heart, faithful and dutiful, but aware that you're not finding joy and contentment, not to the level you want? Does your seriousness need fun, happiness, and joy? Or are you like this father? Are you growing more and more aware that you are not passing on what really matters? The pleasure and delight to be alive in God's creation. So just think for a minute or so, and then we'll sing in worship.